Welcome to Natural Recovery from Suffering. This is Scott Killaby. What is vulnerability? My vulnerability, that's what I want to talk about. And it's challenging because with things like that, they're experiential. And if the mind gets involved in it too soon, it's just for self-protection, to get love, approval. Trying to define things like this. Or talking about things like this. There's so many people who want to talk about things like this, but, and I don't mind doing it either, but I mean, I don't know how to put it in a definition. I can tell you what it's not for sure, but what it is has to be lived. And it's different for all of us, but it shows up as, I think, being fully human. Being able to feel and express what's true. No longer suffering, or no longer seeing that suffering is optional by going to the root of the suffering instead of just creating more suffering by being false with each other, by being something that we're not. So what I want to do in this episode is just to give you some short segments, fairly short, that just some scenarios in my life that I can show you how what I thought was vulnerability was self-protection. And I shared some of this before, but I share it because those that are doing the work easily forget that our everyday responses, even if you haven't done the work, of course, either way, our everyday responses come from repression. And we may think in our everyday responses, or it may seem that that is vulnerability. But I'm just here to challenge you on that, depending on what you think that is or what that is for you, if you're open. Because I had to challenge myself completely on this one and see that it's experiential. And as long as my conditioning was trying to run this one, I couldn't talk about it. I couldn't really talk about my vulnerability. But here we go. Here's the first segment, you could say. I'll start when I was a kid. As I've said before, Dad could cry around me. He would just sit down and cry sometimes because he was either hurt or sad. So that was the only example in my life of real vulnerable emotions early. A healthy example of it. Dad would never get angry. Well, he would, but when he would hold it back. And then when he would finally get angry, you could just feel it. It just, all the kids say that, that Dad's angry, watch out. He wouldn't be abusive, but it's just the intensity of it, given his usual demeanor, which was, you know, loving, open, kind. And he just wouldn't get angry very often again when he did. So that's my only, again, early exposure to anger. And that's how I learned to hold it back and get Dad's love and Mom's. You know, because it worked. But I remember, like, when he would raise his voice, I was a very sensitive kid. Very empathic, meaning I had to monitor people because of my own repression. My own trauma, I had buried anger. A lot of the empath, it is sensitivity. It's also repression and having to self-protect in relationship from an early age. And so when my dad would start to, his energy would raise or his voice, if I would cry, I could, but I didn't want him to see that. But it's not because the conditioning of the sadness is bad or anything like that. It was because then he would see how scared I was of his anger. And it was anger, my own anger, that I was most afraid of. I just didn't know that. So that sadness, which my dad displayed, which I don't know if it was authentic, I'm speaking for myself, that I would display would sometimes be situationally safe. I just didn't and could not express anger. As a kid, and I understand that now to be the source of my suffering, so that's why I'm telling you this. But I could cry. And it wasn't always fake, or not fake, but it wasn't always just so that because I couldn't get angry at Dad. And it was just safer than anger. But, you know, I've lost, as I said, six people closest to me, including my mom, but best friends. And have cried my eyes out at those funerals. And that was authentic. You know, but, and I told the story of my mom's funeral. There again, just crying loudly in the funeral home. Everybody else is quiet. I remember hearing myself. I couldn't stop. And somebody, my aunt actually, right behind me, to my left, she taps on my shoulder and she says, "I can see that you're not handling this very well." And I turned around and said, well, I would have said, had I not been an anger repressor, "Mind your own business, I'm handling this just fine. You're the one holding it back." But instead I just kept crying. Because that felt real and was real for me. And I could see how other people couldn't open to that emotion. Many people in the funeral home, not everybody. So that was my vulnerability for real. But I have to tell you some other scenarios that I thought were real vulnerability, but ended up not being. And I've told you guys these stories, but I want to keep telling you that because I do want to take these topics like vulnerability and authenticity seriously in this work or in spirituality, because I think it's so important. Otherwise, we use spirituality to avoid emotion and like try to get out of human stuff. And it's like a bypass, right? So it's important to talk about this. But you have to be careful with subjects like this. I mean, if you come at it from the mind, you could be trying to get love, approval. You could just like be fooling yourself. Any of us could. That's why we have to take it with great care, I think. Stay tuned for the next scenario. I was always affectionate, even when I was in the closet by the time I was in high school. When I dated girls, I liked being affectionate with them. I just didn't want to have sex with them. And the affection was friendly and loving, but not, you know, romantic or sexual. And I say that because I've always appeared kind of on the surface, especially in close relationships, as affectionate and fairly vulnerable, actually. I think most of my exes would say, to some degree, there's exceptions to that, because that was always safer for me to show that in certain situations, to be loving, actually, and supportive, and not to rock the boat too much, really, at all. Because I didn't really understand or know vulnerability. I had anger repression, doing the best I could with it. And I very much wanted love, just like so many of you, to fall in love. And I'll just tell the story real quick. Before I actually was in a relationship where both people are there, you know, because I always fell for men who wouldn't love me back before relationships like Chester and others. And I've told this story again. I just want to tie it into the my vulnerability topic. In college, just to help you understand my vulnerability, is that I would pick these guys that wouldn't love me back. And then, as I said, I'd be in the dorm room at night just practically crying to myself, dramatizing the hurt and the woundedness that I feel and identifying with I'm unlovable, because all of that was safer than the buried anger. But I didn't know that I had buried anger. I didn't understand that that's why identification is so seductive. So I was just in the identification and feeling very vulnerable, very raw, actually. That was my ego, in a way, is the vulnerable, wounded, you know, not big, not angry, hurting, actually. Now, did I show that always? Sometimes. Not always. Nope. Because part of the drama of believing that you're unlovable is not expressing the hurt fully. Not just the anger, holding that back, but not expressing the hurt fully. But man, I could at times, if I could use that if I was hurt enough, and I could say that because I certainly couldn't get angry. Even though that's a part of heartbreak too, is anger or death. We're angry, or there's a breakup, we're angry. But if we don't understand that vulnerability and love includes anger, or that anger is also presence or is also love, we won't include that in the process, and we won't ever really experience the vulnerability, real vulnerability. And that's what I want to say about those college years is, no, that's not real vulnerability, whether I expressed it or not, or the later relationships where I kept getting hurt, and then there would be this unlovable story and the drama of that and all the suffering and the identification and the victim. That was all safer than the buried anger. So I understand why that was there now. We have to talk about my vulnerability. I have to get more real than that. And I think you guys will too, to talk about vulnerability. It just depends on what your repression is, you know. Maybe for you, you could never show or feel any of that because you repressed vulnerable emotions. But I did, but I didn't, you know. So, but what is your mechanism? You still had repression, like me. And it was safer to feel and experience whatever you experienced in your college years or whenever. Same mechanism, though. Just maybe different repression. You had the same unlovable or not good enough story, but different feelings with it, different sensations, maybe similar. We are a lot alike, actually, in the end. We're all just afraid to get hurt again. And then we hold back some or all emotions to avoid that. And then when we get hurt again, we continue to hold those back to continue not to get hurt again. And it just doesn't work. And we suffer. And we have all that in common. Well, I've told that story before. That I thought was my vulnerability, but I had to tell that, you know, to get to what my real vulnerability is here. And so finally, when I stop sabotaging, you know how we do? Like we keep picking people who don't love us back or there's just heartbreak. Finally, when I did enough processing to be in a relationship in which somebody would actually love me back and I would allow that. Because you got to have that, I think, to find real vulnerability. I couldn't find it by just unconsciously picking guys that wouldn't love me back and then hurting a lot on the surface and holding anger back. I could never experience real vulnerability there. I couldn't open up enough to another human being in that trauma state. And how many of you are sabotaging your life and you don't know you're doing it? You can't help it. But it's the same mechanism of sabotage. And so when it looks like, oh, men don't love me, or women aren't into me, or this girl doesn't, but your system is choosing suffering until it isn't anymore. So fast forward through all the times when I wouldn't allow myself to even open to a human being fully, to discover what vulnerability might really be, and that I had disconnected from a lot of friends because, well, I had friendship trauma because of being bullied. I wasn't going to discover vulnerability there. I just didn't know what vulnerability was until I finally allowed somebody in. So there we go to the next segment. Stay tuned. It took me a while to be in a gay relationship where I could allow someone to love me back. It had nothing to do with being in the closet. It had more to do with being in the closet of repression. I couldn't open to myself enough to allow someone in because of the trauma of the past. But when I finally did, I couldn't fully let someone in. And you guys may experience this too. When you stop sort of the sabotage cycle of not being able to find someone, then you find someone, but it doesn't work out. And you may not know why, and you have all your reasons on the surface, but you know, what is the real reason? I mean, once we do the repression work, we know it's driven from that, by that. The one thing, you know, that I talked about in the podcast all your suffering is connected to one thing. That network of programs, but we don't know that, of course, while the suffering is happening, and so sabotage is happening because we don't know that we're creating it. But when you finally open to someone, you know, the sabotage shifts to now, not only, I mean, no longer can I not find someone. Well, I found someone, but I can't really open to them. And it can look like it's the other person, just like it, you know, did when you couldn't find someone. It looks like nobody loves me. Or it could feel like you. Some of us take that on fully, but we don't really see where it's coming from. And when we get in a relationship, we do plenty of shadowing, right? When we're not clear and we make it about the other person or about us, but we identify with stories of deficiency and lack or victim, which keep us safe from the buried stuff. All of this does. Whether we shadow stuff out at our partner that we now have found, or whether we just take everything on ourselves, or both. So I had to go through that, and a relationship had to end. Now I see, because I couldn't feel and express what was true the whole time because of the anger repression. No matter how much spiritual work I had done, that relationship was bound to fail, if for no other reason than I couldn't open to anger. And I needed to, because by the end of the relationship, I had gotten really sick. Not only had I gone through cancer, possibly connected to the anger repression, but then spinal stenosis at the end of that relationship. Sort of the consequence of not being able to open to that. So what was my vulnerability in that relationship? Well, that was during the time when, I was, as a teacher, coming out with inquiry that would get to these deficiency stories, identity, ego identity, but rooted in the body. Well, not actually. We dismissed the repression like so many of these non-dual teachings do. But I was talking about whatever identity one has and what you really are then. But you can't live and embody what you really are until you get to the repression. I just didn't know that. And I was just pointing to how, well, I didn't mind telling people, for example, that I had an unlovable trigger every now and then. That's vulnerable. And I'm a teacher and I'm being vulnerable, you know, that's good, right? Show people how to process their ego identity and their woundedness and hurt, or from time to time anger. But we never got to the repression, I mean. I didn't, as we non-dual teachers often miss. But I just wanted to point out is that my vulnerability? I don't think so. It's kind of part of it, but it was the safer version of it, safer version of vulnerability for me. And then in my relationship at the same time, I wasn't feeling and expressing anger. So it was a safer version of vulnerability, which involved from time to time a trigger into, I'm unlovable. And I would share this as a teacher. And then I would show how to process it. And the process helped to clear that story from coming, or that identity, but I didn't get to the repression. So that's when I got sick at the end of the thing. The repression created the spinal stenosis, produced that. If you can see how this whole topic of vulnerability is so important, when you really look at it, it's so connected to everything. And my next relationship will, I think, show it even more. But this one, I just wanted you to see that I didn't know my vulnerability during that relationship or as a teacher during that period. I can't point to any of that and say that's actually real vulnerability, because it's so experiential and we're doing the best that we can as long as we have buried emotion still. We're just doing the best that we can. There's no end point or carrot. We're like, okay, now we're vulnerable. But energetically, there actually is. It's just not like a point. But we know ourselves. We come to know what we're feeling. We're aware. We're conscious and embodied in that way. And so we know, you know, what we're feeling and or not. And we know what vulnerability is because of that. It's energetic. you'll see it. To know vulnerability is to do this repression work, and it's emotional. It's the whole experience of vulnerability is energetic. It's like you know yourself, and so you can be yourself. And even if that means being the part of yourself that you've previously didn't want to show, you can show that too. That's what makes it really vulnerable. I couldn't do that in that relationship or as a teacher during that time period. But stay tuned. I have another or some more scenarios for you about my vulnerability. If you were to ask me during that time period of that relationship and as a teacher during that time period, which would have been 2007 when I started writing books until 2016, if you had said, what is vulnerability, Scott? What is your definition of it? I wish somebody would have interviewed me. But I mean, I don't know what I would have said, but I feel like I would have said, it's when you can be emotionally honest with people, even if that means showing something very vulnerable. And then if you would have said, well, what do you mean by something vulnerable? I would say something that you're afraid to express. And you might say, well, what would that be? And I'd say, well, imagine that you don't want to show you're hurt or that you're sad or wounded, that it's just too vulnerable, too raw. And you might, I don't know, you might say, well, so what emotions are considered vulnerable then? And I might have said, well, sadness, hurt, grief, shame, maybe fear. Okay, and you say, well, what about anger? I'm pretty sure I would have said no, because I don't understand and I don't grok or have any insight around how anger is included in being vulnerable or vulnerability. Spoken like a true anger repressor, convinced at the conscious level of what they're saying, unaware of what's driving them. I just heard another teacher say recently, we should never bring anger into a situation. Spoken like a true anger repressing teacher. Well, I mean, it's a good question, you know. So it's experiential. If you try to come to it from the mind, if you have repression, you can't get there. Your mind won't let you. It wouldn't let me. I mean, I should say. So, but if you would have asked me, well, so you can express anger to people, Scott? And I might have said, well, I don't know what I would have said about that because I had the repression, but I had gotten angry from time to time, you know, like when you hold it back enough and then like my dad, it would get, you know, because when I was a kid, like I said, my dad's anger, because he rarely showed it, when it started to get in, certain level of intensity, ugh, shut down for me. So I just, yeah, I couldn't have imagined anger as part of vulnerability. But if you would have asked me, what about the fear of anger then? If you have a fear of anger, isn't that included in vulnerability, fear? I would say, can we stop this questioning right now? Can we just come back to awareness, please? Let all that come and go, that question. Because I don't know how to answer that one. I don't know how I would have answered. I don't know. Because it's a good question, actually. Unless we just say, well, fear isn't part of vulnerability. We don't show fear ever. Because if you say we show fear, well, then we have to show fear of anger. We have to, like, talk about that, even if we can't. Isn't that part of it? But, like, when we start talking about vulnerability, we got to get real, you know? And that's an area that some of us just don't want to go to, the buried stuff, whether it's hurt, sadness, or anger. But when it comes to vulnerability and me, and since I'm talking about my vulnerability, yeah, I definitely would not have included it. So when I got into my relationship with Chester, as I've said, oh, I had chronic pain. And then, you know, there were times when his anger would start to rise like my dad's, and then I would shut down. I couldn't get angry. Still anger repressing. I was in anger repression. And also, well, I thought I was being vulnerable in different ways with Chester. I've already talked about how I would try to de-escalate his anger, which was, I thought, very vulnerable, until I recognized, oh, that was also coming from my anger. I was trying to change the way he felt and the way he expressed so I could feel safe. And all that, even like trying to breathe or point to presence or helping in that way, was just to deny his experience. But I couldn't see it. You know, in any attempt that I was making to be vulnerable, I was just gaslighting him in a way. Actually, I was gaslighting myself because I had the buried anger. So vulnerability in the beginning of that relationship was still unknown to me because of the repression of anger. But I'll tell you, though, at the same time, that I couldn't open to anger with him, and I had the chronic pain. Also, I consider myself pretty vulnerable, if I may say so, because you guys know the love language types. Okay, so, you know, your love language, meaning maybe acts of service that your partner does for you, that means they love you, or something else. Mine was always physical touch and affection. So that brings us into a whole nother realm of my vulnerability, in which I bamboozled myself again, coming from repression, but I couldn't see it. There's nothing wrong with it, but it's so cool when you see it. I want to show it to you. Stay tuned. So the chronic pain that came about because I couldn't express anger in my first real relationship was getting worse with Chester, who could get angry. You guys have heard this story. I keep telling it under different themes so we can tie things together. And you can also reflect on your own life and see the mechanism running. I only know my experience. I'm sorry if I tell stories again. Just be glad that I can open up now, I guess. Like I couldn't before, speaking of my vulnerability. But all this stuff is going on at once. It's important to talk about because you may not see it all connected. Chronic pain getting worse. His anger would mean shutdown for me. I might be de-escalating his anger or playing the presence thing, trying to do that when he was just angry and I couldn't be. And I buried it and wouldn't allow myself to be. And so a lot of the strategies on the surface were just self-protection strategies for me with the buried anger, even if they look vulnerable. Okay, I don't want to talk about that too much because I've talked about that in the podcast episode, All the Rage. If you want to hear how my vulnerability was used as a weapon or a shield in different scenarios, go to that podcast episode. I'm taking us down a different road here because vulnerability can look so many different, look like vulnerability in different ways, like on the surface. But when you go deeper, you start to see something. Like, it was at the same time my pain is getting worse and I can't open to anger with him, I'm affectionate because my love language type is physical touch and affection. And you also have to remember that when I was a kid, as I've told you guys this, the six guys that bullied me from fourth to sixth grade, I had sex throughout those years with four of them, sometimes more than once. Sometimes they would initiate it, sometimes I would. And so that I learned early that physical touch and affection means that no matter how you're treating me otherwise, if you're touching me, that means you love me. You love me. That's what that means. So when I got with Chester, when his anger would start to arise like dad's, or the aggression of like the bullies, even though he's not bullying me, he's just angry, my system with the chronic pain would store the anger. And we would resolve it in some way without me going to the root, which is also making the pain stay around, of course. And then, like, if he would touch me, be affectionate afterwards, or we would have sex, like, after we talk some things out, process a little bit, but not the anger for me, it would just teach me that, like, okay, that means you love me. And it kept me from getting to the anger. It's just like when I say saying I'm sorry too early can look like a narcissist from the outside, but from the inside, you're trying just not to live from trauma anymore and avoid your buried emotions by saying, I'm sorry, you're sorry, great. I don't have to feel this now, neither do you. The stuff that we just stirred up, we don't have to feel it now because we love each other and we're sorry. It just isn't very real. It also just more suffering, I've noticed, when we live like that for me. It just, there's something different that has had to happen for me to be free from this suffering called human life and relationship. Because I would sit next to him and be very affectionate, you know, which seems very open and very loving and is. But that's also how I was raised. It was okay to be affectionate. In his family, it wasn't. And his stepmother and dad weren't. And his brothers weren't. And so his grandmothers were, and he knew affection a little bit, but not how I experienced it and wanted it. He loved me very much, actually. Still does. And I know that, whatever that may mean for you or me or him. But affection was on the scale of, I wanted more. I wasn't mean about it, but I brought it up. And for some people would say, well, that's really vulnerable of you to express your wants and needs. That's great, Scott. That's wonderful. And it was on one level. But obviously he didn't want to be or couldn't be more affectionate than he was. That's the reality. And sometimes in asking for our needs and not knowing where it's coming from, we're blind to, well, how they can't even fulfill that. He couldn't. Or he would have been in the way that I'd wanted, obviously, right? If he could have, he couldn't. But I didn't care about that. Because sometimes when we're expressing our wants and needs, we're actually blinded from where it's coming from, and I was. And I'll explain that in a second. Well, because when I was a kid and I was having sex or being affectionate with some of those boys, I was angry. But I had to bury it and get love on the surface through physical touch and affection. You know, forget the bullying that's going on at school during the physical touch and affection or sex, but I'm angry at the unconscious level. So with that still buried with Chester, well, my whole life actually, there it was, you know, still unconscious. And so when he would get angry, the signal was, well, you still love me, because, and then I'd like a little bit more affection. Instead of me going to my anger, which is the source of all this. Now, what do I mean by that? In a very real way, when we seek our needs outside of ourselves, and it's a need, like a compulsion even, or something that we feel like we really need, we may not be seeing that it's coming from, we can't feel and express what's true for us. We have buried emotion right then. We can't meet our own needs. At the repression level, we can't meet ourselves and what we've buried. We don't know that. And so we turn to the other person innocently, and there's nothing wrong with it. We say, babe, I wish we could be more affectionate, or you could be a little bit more affectionate. So innocent. See, I chose that relationship, remember? For whatever reason, we choose a relationship, and then, my needs aren't being met. Oh, and I have chronic pain, but that's not connected to that. Oh, and he gets angry sometimes, but I can't, but that's not connected to any of that either. But it's all connected. I'm trying to get my needs met outside of myself, and I'm looking pretty vulnerable, too, at the same time. And he doesn't look very vulnerable to me. It's like he won't be that affectionate sometimes. That's not very vulnerable, Chester. If he's listening to this, and he does sometimes, babe, you can come in the room and tell me if I'm missing anything here. But I don't know how he saw that, but I'm sure it made him feel bad, even if I delivered it with good energy, because it's like someone saying, you just need to be different. As clear as I thought I was, you know, because we get things mixed up. we think, well, if I'm expressing my needs, then I'm being clear and I'm being vulnerable, no matter what the damage or the outcome or the cause or the impact or whatever. It's just blinded still. If you know what I've learned is that when you really, really love someone, you ask them questions. You find out how they feel. What happened to them? Are they hurting? What have they buried? Why aren't they opening up? Maybe they don't want to talk about it. Do I even know that? Have I asked that? Do I know any of this? Instead of just saying, here's what I need. This was early in the relationship. I just hadn't gotten to know myself. It was almost age 50 at that time. It was really about time to get to know myself instead of just turning to this man and saying, can you be more affectionate sometimes? People say, well, if you can say that, then maybe you won't cheat on your partner, right? If you can express your needs. Well, it's not that simple. If you have repression, you still might. Because you think that your partner's supposed to fulfill your needs. And then if that one does it and you can't express the anger, for example, or the hurt that's really buried, then you might. But just saying I need affection but not knowing where it's coming from, well, I don't know about that. That didn't work out too well. But when I saw it and I went to the anger repression instead of, or when I would ask him for that, when I would take that to the anger repression, when I wouldn't get what I needed, I just saw that where that came from. And it relieved the suffering there. And I saw that he's giving me exactly the affection that he can give. It's perfectly enough because it's what he can give. It's all he can give. To want more is like, you know, Byron Katie said, it's like wanting a couch to be a chair. But you would think I would know that, but with repression, you can't really grok it and live it and embody it. You can say it. We can write it in books. I've written things like that in books, but to live it and embody it is something different. So I have another scenario coming. Stay tuned. So my quote-unquote vulnerability included wanting Chester at times to be more vulnerable. It was hard for him growing up. But sometimes, again, when you're expressing what your wants and needs, you don't ask questions. You know, we just go with it. And because we're not conscious enough to really get to know someone, to really love someone, to be intimate with them and find out. And then ask for what we need in that as we're finding out, right? But I couldn't do that around vulnerability because I had anger repression. So then I would turn to him, and it would be a good energy, a very rather peaceful energy at times, unless I was just in a certain mood, of course, and then it might come off a certain way. But because he grew up in a family in which being, well, expressing vulnerable emotions or love, sadness, hurt, or whatever was not allowed, really didn't happen in his household. So here I'm saying, I want you to be vulnerable. I'd like you to be, but yeah. And I think this is my vulnerability. I'm thinking, speaking, right? But is it? Is that my vulnerability? So now I'm looking at him and I'm saying, oh, it'd be nicer if you could, but that was just making these demands on people, but they come off as like, I'm expressing my needs and wants. Does that mean we don't express our needs and wants? I'm not saying that. In fact, if anger repressors can't express their needs and wants, keep doing the work. But it's not just about that. There's a deeper seeing here. If you keep going with it and you want this to happen, and it's just the consciousness that stands in the way doesn't want to see this. And maybe you've already seen it. But in making that request, in having that need, did it rise to the level of a need? I mean, I think it did if I said it. But that was often in times after an argument where he could only express anger, really. He couldn't open to sadness, hurt, or more vulnerable emotions because his conditioning wouldn't allow it in that moment until he could, you know, calm down or whatever. But even if I would say that, see, there's always a strategy there when you have repression. You just can't always see it. I couldn't. And in asking him to be vulnerable, I wasn't being vulnerable because I still wasn't opening to my anger. Still coming from my conditioning, wanting everybody to be more peaceful and vulnerable and, you know, more like me. Kind of narcissistic, actually. But it looks vulnerable on the surface in relationships sometimes. Looks that way. Maybe. But I just didn't know vulnerability in those moments. But I knew how to ask for what I needed, I guess. You would think I was like expressing and meeting my needs, but I really wasn't because I hadn't opened to the anger. And the very act of holding emotion back creates this need to look outside ourselves. Hey, babe, maybe we could be a little bit more vulnerable instead of going within where the repression is and discovering what real vulnerability is, which is what we're terrified of because it might not be what we thought. And stay tuned for the next scenario. I don't know yet if you can see how my consciousness chose Chester as a mirror to point me back to the repression that was driving my chronic pain. I think I've made it clear in the different episodes, but this one I think can too. That we all do that, right? We're unconsciously choosing people and circumstances in life to suffer until we're conscious enough not to. So, and then comes the area of sex. I'm a Scorpio, for whatever that may mean for some people. It seems to mean something because people always bring it up to me. The sexual Scorpio. And touch and sex and physical affection are my love language. So Chester has dealt with his own trauma, which I shouldn't be talking about, and I won't, as to why. At a certain point in our relationship, we've had really periods of really great sex life, the best I've ever had. And then periods where he couldn't because of what he was going through, which I won't talk about because that's his business. But during those periods, I still wanted sex. Have you ever experienced that, guys or girls, where you're really into your partner? Like, I'm really into him. And it's like I finally have this relationship of love and sex, and he doesn't want to have it. Well, I didn't have at this point, because I'd done a lot of work at the level of identity, I didn't have a lot of deficiency stories in that. But there certainly was this almost like a somatic thing. Yeah, it was from the repression, actually. It's a deeper thing that, deeper than the stories or anything like that, that, you know, would just keep wanting that from him, even though he couldn't give it at times. But the system wasn't concerned with that. I'm just expressing my needs, babe. I'm just letting you know. I didn't say it that way. That sounds rather snarky or something. No, I mean, but people would say that. They might say, oh, well, that, well, you're just, yeah, well, it's a relationship. Of course, wanting sex is natural. You express that, but, you know, he can't give that. Right. Exactly. Sort of. Because that kept happening, even when he didn't want to have sex, not over and over again, but from time to time, until I went to the anger repression. It's like he's a mirror. And the very holding back of anger or other emotion, repressing it, creates this need outside of ourselves. It wasn't like I was holding sex back. You know, it wasn't that. It was the anger still. I mean, if one can really feel and express what's true, they don't suffer. One day, I went into the bedroom and he was sleeping It was in the morning. And I had just been crying because I wanted him. And he was in that period where he couldn't do it with anyone. Or didn't he didn't even think about sex. It wasn't me. It was everyone. He would tell me that all the time. It's not you. I think you're the most attractive thing. That's why I'm with you. But, it, you know, I still wanted it. And but that was, you could say that's a moment of vulnerability. And it was. That was actually real. Those tears were real. Because I had done enough anger repression work by that time to say honestly that that had hurt me. It was hurting me. And that's good that I was able to say that. And it helped us for me to say that. But still, there's that need. It seems so natural too. And it's all okay. It's beautiful, actually. I was so glad that I could express that. It felt better. Because at the surface, everything was going fine with me. It's just like, but you go deep into the body and then you find this pocket of something that still isn't expressed. And if you don't get to that, that unexpressed pocket of suffering becomes in some way the suffering in your life, you know? It just shows up. But if you can feel and express what's true from that, find it, then that's different. And that was different by expressing that. But that's I don't want to leave it there. When I'm talking about my vulnerability, because it's still asking a couch to be a chair. It's not consulting the couch. Do you want to be a chair? It's just saying, I really would like you to be a chair and crying. Shortly after that, I went into a deeper layer of anger repression. And I never put that on him again, sexually. And by the way, we had some good sex the other day. But it's when you, it's like when you give people the space to be themselves, you know? It's important to express needs. It's really important for anger repressors and all of us to be able to express whatever is true for us. But to continue looking at where it's coming from. Otherwise, there's always going to be some suffering in it for somebody. Okay, stay tuned. I could keep giving you examples, more segments, but I think we have to get down to what is vulnerability. Well, it's experiential, and it's my experience that I couldn't know it, live it, embody it until I went to the anger repression fully and kept going to it. And why not? Because it just endless freedom and deeper connection, authenticity, compassion, insight, wisdom. Why not? But I just resisted it. And on the surface, just did my best to express my vulnerability. And then I could get angry, and that changed everything. Yeah, that changed everything. Because now I know what vulnerability is. I can't express it. When the mind thinks it knows it, then you know, guarantee you don't really know it. I can say what it's not. I can process when it seems like something is, but living it is different because through the processing and seeing, then there it is. When you go to the right places, to the one thing, the network of programs that drives all that. Being able to get angry is so important for real vulnerability. it reminds me to talk about it this way, maybe rather crudely, is that when I had the BDSM addiction, this was after just the first few years of being a teacher, I just liked to invite men over and have them treat me as bad as they possibly could within limits, sexually, bondage, whatever else you can imagine, within limits. We talk about the energetic difference between humility and humiliation. An anger repressor knows that. We spend our whole life like appearing humble to protect ourselves. Because we don't know real humility or vulnerability. We can't. And then we often just invite the humiliation because that's how it all started for us, the trauma. I know what it did for me. Or the hurt, or whatever started it. And then we act it out as adults. And I just want you to see, I don't want you to visualize that sexually, no. I want you to just hear it and just look at your own life. You can think about whatever you want. But what I'm bringing it up for is this, is in those moments of being treated like that by men and enjoying it, don't get me wrong. That was coming from the inability to exert my own power or to get angry. That anger repression was driving that. I couldn't see it at the time. Shame was involved, but shame protected me. Shame about that protected me from being able to process the buried anger driving it. I was submissive because in my life I was submissive. I was going along with all kinds of things in relationship or authority issues or whatever else, and I couldn't feel and express anger in my life. And so in bed, that became a turn on. There was shame attached to it. I was reliving, trauma. And if you can just feel that for a second, that vulnerability for someone like me must include power and anger. And humility must also include those things. In a way that you can't understand, you just have to know in your experience by suffering and thinking otherwise, is how I've seen it. Because it certainly wasn't very humble, no matter how I was acting publicly, to allow men to do that to me. It was humiliating. But I had false humility, as often anger repressors do publicly, by not being able to be myself, including be angry. And, so this is, really important, what vulnerability is. I can see now why it took so long to talk about it, because it's just experiential and energetic. And once I could, boundaries, without that, an anger repressor, however could you experience vulnerability, authenticity? I didn't understand that. That my capacity to say no, to set my own boundaries, even if somebody doesn't agree with them, to speak, to get angry, is my power. And without it, I will take a lot in relationship and store it, the anger. And that's suffering. But if we're going to talk about vulnerability, we have to include that. Anger. Without it, we don't have boundaries. We don't have healthy relationships. We still have suffering. So, if you want to talk about vulnerability within suffering, we can do that. Some people like to talk about it that way. And of course, we could just sit here and be vulnerable about what we're suffering around. I can tell you, if I'm suffering around not good enough, I can tell you that. I can tell you that I feel hurt. Maybe you're feeling not good enough and you can tell me you're angry. That's vulnerable. It is, actually. At a certain level. But what if we discover later that I'm feeling unlovable because I have anger repression and I just can't open to that here or anywhere? And you're feeling not good enough because you have sadness repression. You can't open to that here or anywhere. And so how vulnerable are we being? Because vulnerability is not just talking about ourselves and our emotions. That can often be safe, depending on how we frame it and whether we have repression. It's okay, but we should call it out because it's suffering so that we can process it. How do you love someone? Speaking of vulnerability, how do you do it? I don't know. Without being able to feel and express everything. Because, it's so cheesy, but you can't love yourself. I mean, no wonder people don't like those spiritual phrases that are actually true, those cliches, because they hit a certain chord for some people. But how do you love yourself? I mean, how do you love another person if you can't love yourself, those parts of yourself that you've buried? Even if it's anger or hurt or sadness or whatever. And along the way, I thought about shame, or I considered it, I processed it, I felt it, I'm human. Shame is not something that we express. And how would you do that anyway? I mean, you could do it. We do it, I've done it. But when I went deeper with that, speaking of my vulnerability, because for me, the real vulnerability is when we get to the stuff that we're most afraid of. That's the repression. And along the way, there are places that we can land. It's just part of the process. And we stay safe that way. Shame is one of them. Hate is another. Because it's safer to hate people from a distance than to feel and express what's true to them in person, including hurt, anger, or sadness, or fear. But shame is another way of protecting ourselves. If you notice, or if you go deep enough, you'll see that it's like an identity, and it's connected mostly to what we've buried. Like, for example, with me, anger repression. That's what the shame was protecting the whole time. So even if I were to express shame, it was still safer than the buried anger. Was it vulnerable? Yeah. Compared to other things, of course. But if we're interested in real vulnerability, why don't we just get to the root of suffering? I should have told myself, but couldn't, because I was in anger repression. I mean, if I would have known that that was the route, what I mean, I think I would have gotten to it earlier, although we resist that, and I would have resisted it. It just seems to me, if I say it to people now, that if you want real vulnerability, you go to your primary repression. That's the answer, because that's the thing you're most afraid of. And we have a way of processing that now that doesn't make it as scary as it seems. And that's why it's doable. It takes an earnestness, doesn't it? Even to hear something like this. It does in us. It's like, I'm interested in that, even though I know that that's at times going to be uncomfortable. I'm already suffering. If one realizes I might have a lifetime of suffering. If this repression, like science says, is driving suffering, I might continue to have it if I don't do anything about it. If I continue to settle for my definition of vulnerability or not to care about vulnerability, even though I think that's one of the signs of freedom and I don't know, like transformation. I don't think it means telling everybody everything. I don't think there are rules with it. I think it's experiential. I think it requires earnestness for each of us. And I think that the way that it comes about in this work is if we relentlessly stay with the one thing in practice, no matter what the surface suffering is, stay with the network of programs of your particular repression that drive that. So when you're living your life and you're seeing your version of what I talked about, which is that you're showing up the best that you can. And just have compassion. I mean, that's what the presence practices are for, really, those should be included in this work. Just rest and allow it all. When you see yourself doing whatever you're doing on the surface in your relationship, like strategies or stories or shadows, but go to the root. Go to the repression. Learn how to do it, because it otherwise you the suffering is prolonged, is what I've learned in terms of this in all topics: vulnerability, authenticity, freedom. As I just could not know vulnerability until I went there. And I don't even know if I've explained it to you. I could just tell you that there's a sense of wholeness within us, like the full spectrum of emotions are available. We're not stuck in particular trauma responses anymore. So we know the parts of ourselves, and that's very vulnerable in and of itself. Just to know all the parts of yourself, or to be open to that and processing that, is very vulnerable, actually. Now, even if it's anger that you're processing and you're opening to, that's very vulnerable. And actually to start to express it is also very vulnerable. Or hurt. It's very vulnerable, of course, but people know that already. I don't have to coach in that area, because those who repress hurt and sadness, I think they know that it's those vulnerable emotions are the ones that you're afraid of. And that's the work that you have to do. Here is go to those buried emotions to experience the real vulnerability. Or the vulnerability, right? Because you've buried those. And, you know, when we bury hurt and sadness, you're also going to see shame. You're going to see burying or holding back joy. Love, holding that back, that's vulnerable. But it's all connected. Stay with that, but stay mostly with the hurt and sadness repression, because if you can feel and express the emotions that are true for you, the rest tends to come. The joy will come online, because it's a lightness of being when you're no longer holding back these emotions. The heaviness of that. The love comes online because you can feel and express what's true, the full spectrum, so you can be yourself. You don't have to make love happen. You remove the blocks. The repression is the main block. It's the only block, really. It's whatever makes that primary repression up for you. And maybe that's how it's supposed to be. I'll leave you with that. That the spiritual concepts like vulnerability, it's important to use them, but it's like everything. It's a pointer. And I just hopefully let you in more to my world, because I also think that's a pointer too when we share. But really only if we share where we're looking at where it's coming from as honestly as we can, with the level of consciousness that we have. And I think that there's earnestness would want us to pick up the skills to because we're suffering, to discover really what vulnerability is for each of us. And to process our preconceived notions of what that looks like. Because the mind will, hopefully, as you've seen here, and maybe in your own life, will thwart the experience of that all along the way. But when it's experienced, it's delicious. It's worth the processing that you're doing. Maybe you're already experiencing it in your relationship. That's awesome. And you know what I'm talking about. It's beautiful. Stay with it. Trust me on that one. Because these words mean something for me now. Not identified with them, but they mean something because I've opened to these things and you can too. And authenticity also means something, but I didn't want to do a podcast again on that. Vulnerability felt like the right way to go. If you haven't started this path, you can always go to killaby.com and scroll to the bottom of the page. And you'll find a free repression test. And if you take that test, we'll send you some resources to get started on this path. You can also check the description of this episode and you can see a link to that test. And if you see this podcast episode come out before May 4th, you will also see a link to our first ever public online retreat of doing this particular work that I talk about here on the podcast. So check out that link too if it's there. Thank you for listening.